comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thank you for being here. It is talk radio like nowhere else on the planet. We're here because you matter and because you have a right to know. Speaking of having a right to know, did you know that NASA has discovered something really curious, out at the edge of our solar system? What they have discovered is that the magnetic field of our solar system is not smooth out on the edges like they expected, but it is a whole big cluster of gigantic magnetic bubbles. So if you you've seen some of you wash dishes by hand, you don't use a machine, even though I have a machine, I sometimes do them by hand, and you've seen what happens. You put the soap in, you turn the water on, you get this big pile of bubbles, just bubbles on bubbles on bubbles, right? Well, that's the way the edge of our solar system looks magnetically. And it's just been newly discovered. They didn't know it, but they know it now. It's interesting because, you see, now they're saying because of all of these bubbles, and I'm not quite sure how this works, but because of all of these bubbles out at the edge of the solar system, it lets in a great deal more cosmic radiation than they thought. And that means that space travel is a great deal more dangerous than they previously thought. But we're protected, they say, here on Earth because we have a magnetic shield around us. But out in space, there's a great deal of cosmic radiation, a great deal more than they thought there was, and it's dangerous for astronauts. It's dangerous for space flyers. Well, you know, that sort of is interesting. They've had these space flyers up there on the International Space Station now for years and years and years. They've been sending them up there, and who knows, Lord knows what they do up there. But anyway, there they are. And now we're in a phase where NASA is pretty much out of the manned space exploration business. This sort of, I'm not saying that this story is not true, it may be true, but this certainly gives them some cover, doesn't it? Well, you know, it's just way too dangerous out there, and until we come up with better technology, we can't do manned space exploration. We have to wait another 100 years. Like I say, I'm not saying the story's not true, but it certainly is convenient. Something else that's convenient is the K-Files. That's our free weekly newsletter. So if you're not getting it, you got to ask yourself, why aren't you getting it? If you haven't subscribed, where's the genius in that? I mean, there's no light bulbs on at all in that closet. You got to subscribe. It's free. Just click where it says K-Files at our website. We'll be back right after this. All right, Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and tonight my guest will be Clifford Clift. He is the International Director for MUFON, and he, right at this moment, is just wrapping up with appearing on another radio show. So he's already been speaking for an hour. So what we're going to do, we're going to give him just a few minutes to sort of relax and rest his voice and kind of get ready for us. And he'll be joining us in just a little bit. He'll join us probably after the next break. So that's going to be interesting. He's always an interesting guest. But, you know, MUFON has taken some really withering criticism here within the past few months. And so I want to ask him about that, and we'll have the opportunity to ask him about it and get directly from him what his response and his answer to that would be. I think it's better to hear. Look, I'm not saying anything bad about Clifford Clift when I use this cliche. It's best to hear it from the horse's mouth. Okay, so we'll ask him about that. And we've got some more things to ask him about relative to MUFON. And we will be opening the telephone lines tonight when Clifford Clift is with us. So if you have questions, if you have comments for the International Director of MUFON, this will be the night, and you'll want to be able to, you'll want to be sure that you call in and talk with him. Now, I want to give you a quick update on Jeff Harvey, which is really not an update. Jeff Harvey has been a guest on this show a number of times, primarily as a remote viewer, but he was with us once talking about this implant that was removed from his leg. Now, I sent out a notice to all of our K-File subscribers and all of our members. I sent out a notice, I think it was, it was yesterday, I believe. Anyway, notifying you, or day before yesterday. I don't remember. Within the past few hours, I sent you a notice and informed you that he was to have his leg amputated today. Now, in that notice, I simply reminded you that he is the guy who had an implant removed from his leg, and it's the same leg that is being amputated. Some people put the two things together, and they think that there's some connection between the implant and the leg. The implant was removed years ago. Several years ago, a couple of years. As far as I know, there's no connection between the implant and the problem that he has. The problem that he had was a blister developed on his foot and became infected and just continued to progress. They couldn't get it under control, and finally it reached a point where they said, we have to remove the leg. So he was supposed to have had that operation yesterday. I have not talked with him today. I made a decision that I wouldn't call him on the day after surgery, and so that he could recover. And, you know how it is. You don't feel like talking to anybody the day right after you've been through a major operation. So I will tomorrow call him and check to see how he's doing, and I will update you on that tomorrow night. But again, so far as I know, there's no connection between the implant and the infection that has caused him to have his leg amputated. I think they're two completely separate events. I did ask him about it when I talked with him day before the surgery. And he said, well, you know, I don't know. I wouldn't think there's a connection because this started with a blister on my foot. So You know, it's easy to get the things kind of stuck together, especially since I didn't, in my notice to you, definitely say there's no connection. I don't think I said that. Anyway, apparently there's not. And I'll update you on Jeff Harvey's condition after I speak with him tomorrow, okay? Now, in the breaks tonight, during, for those of you who are watching our TV channel, be sure you watch during the breaks, because there's something in those breaks you really want to see. I promise you, you really want to see it. All right? So be sure you watch the breaks. Send someone else to get that cup of coffee, because you need to be watching the breaks. All right, we've got a few minutes here before our next break. And as a matter of fact, let's see, we've got about 12 minutes here before the next break. And that should give us time for us to talk about something else I just touched on last night. Comet Elenine. And there are a lot of people sending me email as a result of the comments I made last night. It's not necessarily pro or con, just comments about, you know, additional information and so forth. Now, look, everybody you hear talk about anything at all has their own views, and you have yours. And everyone's opinion is, as long as we're talking about opinions, everyone's opinion is valid. One opinion is as valid as any other. It's an opinion. And so the reason I'm saying that is because some of the email I got said that Richard Hoagland is one of the people who is sort of arguing for the idea that the comet Elenine is being piloted because it's changing courses. And I have said I don't think so. I don't see the evidence of that. But I'm not keeping a close eye on Elenine. It may be it is being piloted, but I really have serious reservations about that. That doesn't mean that I think Richard Hoagland is wrong. He's got his opinion. I've got my opinion. And he bases his opinion on some things that he's observed. And I base my opinion on some generally accepted principles. Not that I have been observing Elenine. Generally accepted principles related to large bodies moving through space and moving past other bodies that are larger. It does tend to change their direction a little bit. It changes their course a little bit because of the gravitational pull. So I'm not opposing Richard Hoagland. And in fact, I'd like to have Richard on the show again and hear from the horse's mouth what he's got to say about Comet Elenine. But I do have reservations about the idea that it's being piloted, that it's being driven, if you will, like a spacecraft. But I could be wrong, couldn't I? I could be wrong. I don't think I am, but I could be. Look, if I thought I was wrong, I wouldn't have said it. All right? And if Richard Hoagland thought he was wrong, he wouldn't say what he says. But we'll see if we can get him and see if we can hear straight from him what he thinks is happening with this comet Elenine. I don't know what his schedule is like, and I don't know if he would have the opportunity and be willing to come on the show and talk to us about it. But we certainly will extend the invitation, and then he can respond in whatever way he wishes. There is something else about Elanine, though, that I want to address, and that's something that I know. Okay? When we first talked about this comet, I showed you what there were people saying it's not even the name of a real person. Elanine is not even the name of a real person, and that it's the ELENIN stands for Extinction Level Event Nibiru is near. Or I also saw Extinction Level Event Nibiru in November. Nibiru, of course, is the name of this alleged other planet that is in our solar system. And the reason I say alleged, some of you say, well, how can you say that? Because Zechariah Sitchin said it was so. Yeah, I know. And Kevin says alleged because I haven't seen it. All right, I'm not saying it isn't there. I'm saying I haven't seen it. Therefore, from my point of view, it's alleged. Okay, so this alleged other planet. Well, it does not stand for that. It is not a code. Elanine is, in fact, the name of the astronomer who discovered it. And when I did the show on that, I showed you his photograph. And I showed you him holding up, he's Russian, I showed you him holding up his national ID card. And it has his picture and his name, and he is indeed Leonid Elanine. And there's a video where he is talking, he's giving an interview on Russian news about this this comet he discovered. So he's a real person. Within the past couple of days, I have also seen on the internet someone saying Elanine means God's grace. And I mentioned that last night, and I want to mention it again tonight and elaborate just a little bit. Because I asked anybody that is an expert in Hebrew, I read it slowly, but I read it. But I'm not an expert. I do read it, and I know how to parse what I'm reading, but I'm not an expert. So I don't know all of the, you know, someone who is an expert in any languages, any language knows all the obscure phrases that even the rest of the population never use, but obscure little phrases. So I ask anybody that happens to be an expert in the Hebrew language to take a look at it, Elanine, and see if it means anything at all in Hebrew. I got one response from someone who said, look, I'm not an expert, but, you know, I can read Hebrew, and I also am working with a dictionary here, and I'm even working on this thing of maybe it's the phonetic instead of the spelling, maybe it's phonetic, because sometimes Hebrew words are not pronounced the way they appear to you. They are pronounced a little bit different. For instance, amen is not amen, it's amen. Anyway, the point is this. Elanine does not mean God's grace. There's really not a word exactly for grace in Hebrew. One word that is used sort of in that respect is also translated loving kindness, and it is the word chesed. C-H-E-S-E-D, chesed. So if you wanted to say God's grace, maybe you might say, because God is E-L, you might say El Chesed. Another word that is used that sometimes gets translated grace, it really means favor, and it is Ken, C-H-E-N, so El Ken. But there's no Elenin. It's not Hebrew. The reason there is no Elenin in Hebrew is because actually it's Russian. It's a Russian astronomer's name. All right. So I didn't get a chance to elaborate a great deal on this last night, and I don't have a chance to elaborate a great deal on it tonight. But I think it's important when something like this is happening. I mean, people are pretty wound up tight on this thing about Elenin coming in. It's going to pass very close to us. It'll pass right in front of the earth, and we will pass through its tail. And so people are really a little bit uptight about that. And maybe we should be. I don't know. It's hard for me to get uptight about anything. I get uptight over family matters, because those are things that I can have an impact on, and there's something I can do. So, you know, but things over which I have absolutely no control, I tend not to get too uptight about it. It's going to happen, whatever it is. It's going to happen. You will find out about it at the same time I do. And I'm, you know, why get uptight in advance over this thing? Because that just ruins every day between now and then. And if that happens to be my last day when it passes in front of us, if that happens to be my last day, then I want all the days between now and then to be good days. You follow me? I think you do. And so I don't get uptight about these things. I don't want you to be uptight about them. It's your choice, but I hope you're not nervous and anxious and worried about the approach of Elenin, because there's nothing you can do about it except to live well between now and then. We'll be back with Clifford Clift on the other side of this break. Out of breath from my mad dash to the coffee pot, you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Clifford Clift, who has joined us. Clifford, welcome back to the show.
Kevin, it's really nice to be back with you. We haven't talked for a while. This is very nice of you. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate those good words, but Clifford, I got to ask you a tough question right here at the beginning.
Okay, let's go for it.
Well, journalistically, it's got to happen. MUFON has been the target of some, I would say, rather withering criticism over the past several months. And it's been kind of a bloody battlefield out there, it looks like. So the question is, what's up with MUFON? Is MUFON still in business? Does it have a future, or are you winding down? What's up with MUFON?
Well, Kevin, what you're saying is so true. We've had a lot of people that have been trying to cause great concerns for MUFON because, whatever reasons, I don't know. But what I can tell you, I don't know what they're talking about most of the time, because it doesn't make sense. But the fact of the matter is, MUFON has got some exciting things going on. Month of May, we had 69 new field investigators approved. Our membership, subscriber to the journal is increasing every month. We're on the move with that. I will be introducing the new state director's handbook at the symposium. We will have a new field investigator's manual approved before long. Our website is being improved, more user-friendly. We've got a lot of great things going. And one of the exciting things is I just got back from New York, Kevin. I was interviewed on for the Daily Show.
Oh, that had to be a rough ride.
Pardon me?
That had to be a rough ride.
Well, they flew me out there Sunday morning, or Sunday afternoon. I got there, went to bed Sunday night, got up and did a shoot with them out in the country about UFOs. The good thing about it is, Kevin, it's going to be a humorous one. They may poke fun at MUFON, they may poke fun at the ufologists, but you know what? A little bit of humor in our life's not going to hurt us.
Well, that's true. And really, the field of ufology needs to lighten up a little bit from time to time. There are people that take it way too seriously.
It just becomes so cultish or something to some people that they can't see the forest for the trees. Life is meant to live in a positive manner. And the more positive and upbeat that we can be, the better all of us will be. People don't like to hear the negative doomsayers. That just gets old.
Well, yeah, it does. I, as a matter of fact, I've just been talking about Comet Elenin and the people who are really wound tight as a top on this thing. And you know, you may disagree with this, but what I said was I don't get uptight about these things because it's coming and there's nothing I can do about it. So I'm going to make every day between now and its arrival a good day. And then if it happens that once it gets here, that's my last day, well, I've had a good time. And
we had a good ride, didn't we?
Yeah, a good ride. But I'll tell you something. I don't think it's an earth buster. I think we're going to get through that. There may be a little bit of upheaval, you know, geologically or something. And yeah, it's going to be, if that happens, it's going to be something for the news. And it'll be tragedy for some people. But for the planet, for the whole planet, we're going to get through it. And we will go on with our lives. So the doomsday aspect of it is something that I can't get too interested in. I'm too busy between now and then. Okay, so you, in response to my question, there are a couple of interesting things that you mentioned. You've had this withering, blistering criticism, and yet your subscriber base for your journal is increasing each month. Is that what you said?
Yes, our subscribers go up every month. Our field investigators' numbers are going up. And we're having a, National Geographic is coming out with a show about MUFON in July or August. And the Daily Show is going to be talking about MUFON. We are the largest investigative organization in the United States and probably the world. People respect that. They know that we're trying to do a scientific study of the UFO phenomenon, and the public respects that. They look at MUFON as the leader. I've had 10 documentary companies contact me wanting to do documentaries, and I ask, well, why are you coming to us? And they said, well, you're the only one that has credible information.
Yeah.
So, when you have that kind of support by the public, the people that are saying all these things, what difference does it make whether we're bringing on three, by the way, Kevin, we're bringing on three interim board of directors to the board of directors, which we will have the selection made by 15th to 20th of July and announced at the symposium. And the reason we're doing that, Kevin, is not only am I and the board of directors charged with the daily operations of MUFON, but we're also charged with our future. And our future is not going to be with the board of directors we have now. The future will be new board of director members. We're going to bring three new ones on, which means they'll have all the privilege rights and responsibilities of a board of director, but it'll be 1 to 3 years before they are a full board member, which means at that point they will have the ability to vote on the issues. Now, that may sound draconian to some of the people that are opposed to MUFON, but the fact of the matter is most board of directors do it this way because when you bring somebody on new to the board of directors, they don't have the history of what's gone on with the issues, and they need to be up to speed before they vote. I know when I've gone on board of directors before, I would abstain from voting until I could understand what the issues were. You can't logically vote for something you don't know about. So our interim positions will allow these members to be caught up to speed and hit the ground running when they're ready to go. So that's pretty.
So you got some plans for the future. Well, the reason I brought this up
about that. Excuse me, Kevin. I'm talking over you.
The reason I brought this up about the journal subscriber base growing. A few years ago, there was another radio host who decided to attack me and my show. Actually, I have no idea why this person took that position. But I was getting email from people saying, have you heard what he's saying about you? And I didn't. But I'll tell you what did happen. My audience numbers went through the roof. The guy was giving me free publicity. So, you know, when people start raising all kinds of hell about you, other people who hadn't been paying attention to you all of a sudden say, you know, I ought to check this out. Let me go over there and take a look at this MUFON thing and let me see what I can find out about it. And so you get free publicity from these people that hate you. And the point being, what they intend for evil turns out for good. And,
well, that's quite right, because the more they talk, the more our numbers go up.
Clifford, you mentioned the symposium. What's that about?
Kevin, this symposium, we've already, attendance numbers are up already to almost where we were last year at the end of July when the symposium started. Story Musgrave is the astronaut who's going to be the keynote speaker, and that's just a phenomenal event for us. We're pretty excited about that. Of course, Stanton Friedman will be there, Linda Moulton Howe, and Jim Sparks, and Joe McMoneagle. We've got a speaker lineup that's just absolutely amazing. And we used to have a full three days. Friday, we'll start off Friday morning with 9 o'clock with a state director's meeting, and we'll be going over MUFON finances, all types of the new state director's handbook, field investigator manual. All these things are going on. We're just going to be extremely busy and productive, which is what we want to be. We want to make this even better than it is now, and we're on the way with this symposium.
Now, do you have a MUFON symposium every year?
Yes, we have one every year. It's usually the end of July, 1st of August, depending on what's going on. Next year, 2012, will be in Cincinnati, Ohio, across the river in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on the move to get it moved around the country again and get more people involved with what we're doing, because it's so important for us to be able to get this information to the public and to the MUFON people that intend it.
Are these symposiums open to the public, or is it just for MUFON members?
No, they're open to the public. As a matter of fact, probably half of the registrations that we have so far are from the public. for this year's. And
well, you know, with that speaker lineup that you've got, I mean, that's pretty heavyweight stuff. Story Musgrave, every one of these people are real diamonds.
Yes, they are.
They really are. But Story Musgrave, not everybody can get Story Musgrave. I know, I've tried. he's a very busy man. And,
yes. He's six times in space, more than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
He's a landscape architect, engineer type now that he's retired. He's just an amazing person and extremely intelligent. So you will know after he talks what's really going on with NASA.
Mm-hmm.
Or what was, since it's about defunct.
Well, and he's got some pretty interesting things to say about extraterrestrial life as well.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. And,
isn't it strange how the majority of the astronauts that I have read about and talked to all have some type of significant belief in extraterrestrial life?
You know, that's true. And it's also true that they seem, most of them, to not want to talk about it a lot. What do you think's up with that?
You know, I don't know, other than the fact that they may have signed some kind of confidentiality agreement when they left. Didn't seem to bother Gordon Cooper or Buzz Aldrin or Edgar Mitchell, but maybe they're the age where, what the heck can they do to me now?
Well, the truth is, what the heck can they really do to you anytime?
Yeah, exactly. Maybe cut off your pension. I don't know. I sometimes doubt that.
Well, you know, anything they do to you confirms to the public that what you said was true.
Exactly.
So anything they do to you, you know, it's kind of like cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know.
We're going to, for breaking our confidence, we're going to fine you. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, if it's the truth, I understand. If it's not the truth, why?
Yeah, exactly. All right, we have to step away for a break. And we'll come back more with Clifford Cliff right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Clifford Clift. Clifford Clift is the International Director of MUFON, and Clifford, we were talking about this symposium, and we were talking about Story Musgrave and what a phenomenal speaker he will be. But you know something, these other folks that you mentioned, Stanton Friedman, you know, Stanton Friedman worked on nuclear rocket engines and worked on them right up until, he said, you know, they did a successful test of one of those engines. And then NASA decided they're not going to do that. They're not going to use nuclear-powered rockets. And, of course, we've got about, I don't know how many satellites up there, military satellites, that have a total of about 50 pounds of plutonium powering those satellites, but no rocket engines, nuclear-powered rocket engines. The Russians have decided that, you know, we've talked about it here on the show, and a lot of people around the world have talked about the fact that the Russians are going to do this manned mission to Mars. And they've decided it will be a nuclear-powered rocket. So Stanton Friedman is going to be stellar as well. Linda Moulton Howe, just about any topic you want to talk about, she's pretty much an expert on it because she's reported on it. What's she going to be talking about?
I think she's going to be talking about the Rendlesham Forest event again with one of the key military, or the Air Force enlisted men, John Burroughs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I think that's what she's going to be involved with, and we're pretty excited about that. The other one that I'm excited about is Joe McMonagle.
Tell us about Joe. What's he going to be speaking on?
Joe is a remote viewer.
Uh-huh.
He's at the Monroe Institute, and he was involved back in the early days with Ingo Swann and Pat Price and those guys that were involved with the remote viewing. My son, who has been to the Monroe Institute where Joe McMonagle is there,
mm-hmm.
He's been there about six 1-week spells, and knows Joe. And first-hand experience from him is that Joe is one of those people that is just, has remote viewing abilities, but Paul says if the word psychic was ever used, that guy's got it. He knows what's going on all the time.
So, what will he be talking about at the symposium? Do you know?
My understanding is that he will be talking about the remote viewing and the UFO activity, some of the things that have happened with remote viewers and UFOs.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've had several remote viewers here on the show. I've had Ed Dames, I've had Paul Smith, I've had Jeff Harvey. I can see the guy's face and can't think of his name now. Isn't that terrible? Anyway, but I'm an old guy, folks. I get away with that. All right, so...
Yes, and I understand it.
But we've had a number of remote viewers, and I've asked almost all of them if they have ever remote viewed the moon. And the answer has been yes, and when I asked what did they see, and also one of them said he saw something similar on Mars. Living machines was the best they could describe it.
Really?
I cannot imagine it. Can you? A living machine.
Well, I do know that... Ingo Swann, in his book Penetration, talks about having gone to the moon remote viewing, and because of the physical presence of his energy, the beings that were there working could sense him and or see him, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But he did indicate that there was a significant activity on the moon, too.
Well, I have that book.
It's a... Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, but it's rare. You can't go to the store and get it.
No, it's out of print, and some people are pretty proud of it on eBay.
Yeah, I saw one, I think it was about $800.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, that's the ask price.
Yeah. But even, if they take a lot less, you're still talking about $400 or $500 for the book.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a great book. It's absolutely amazing. People like Ingo Swann and Joe McMonagle, what they have proven to be right about.
You know, Ingo Swann's an interesting guy too. I've tried to get him. He's a friend of Jerry Wills. Jerry Wills is the co-host or associate host of this show. So when I'm away, when I'm not here, Jerry Wills is the host of the show. They are friends, and I've tried to get Ingo Swann. Jerry has tried to get Ingo to come on the show, and he just says he's through with that. He's not interested. he's done all of that he's going to do ever, and but it would be wonderful if we could get him.
Oh, we would love to have him speak at the symposium, but I Now, he probably talked to us about art, because I understand he's a very accomplished artist.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, this points out something, though, you know, and that is a lot of the people with the real information, the deep information, are getting on in years, and they're not going to be with us forever.
No, that's right.
What is coming in the future?
Well, that's what we're preparing for, MUFON, the board of directors and myself. We want to prepare for the future by bringing on new and younger people. Hopefully, the archives will maintain the integrity of these people that will be moving on intact so that we can reference that. And I think quite certainly, Kevin, that there will be others that will have this ability to be able to do the research that's required, and hopefully they'll use the MUFON archives to do it. That's we have like 28,571 sighting reports in our archives right now.
How long has MUFON been around?
1969, when John Schuessler, Walt Andrus, and Euclid, I'm not sure I say his name right, but started MUFON, and it started Midwest UFO Network. A year later, it changed to the MUFON UFO Network.
Mm-hmm. So, just over 40 years it's been around.
Right.
Uh-huh. And in that 40 years, would you say, honestly, are we any closer, with all these investigations, are we any closer to understanding this phenomena?
I would, you know, that's one of those, I say yes on one hand, because we have more evidence collected to verify that they are extraterrestrial, but on the other hand, how they operate, we're still probably just as far as we ever were away from finding that answer. If we could find the technology, which is what would be great, of what propels these craft, well, we could sure, it would sure help the world.
Well, what if they are like the craft that remote viewers have told me are on the moon and on Mars? Living machines, and therefore do not have a propulsion system because they are alive. Like a bird does not have a propulsion system. It just is alive. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this.
United Kingdom, and you are listening to the fantastic Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to the Kevin Smith Show, and I want to welcome those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour. Welcome aboard. We're glad you are here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away that first hour, but we're glad you're here now. We're talking this evening with Clifford Clift. He is the International Director for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. Clifford, I was saying as we went away for break, you know, you had mentioned that one of the biggest mysteries that still needs to be investigated is the propulsion system for these UFOs. But what if they are living craft, living machines like the ones the remote viewers tell us exist on the moon and on Mars? And maybe they don't have a propulsion system like a bird does not have a propulsion system. Maybe they just fly somehow.
Are you familiar? I believe the name is Adair. That what this came out, I would say, almost 20 years, well, 20 years or so ago. And I don't remember the full story. The one thing that I do remember, he was in the area. It was either Area 51 or a very similar place. But they took him because he had missile technology more advanced when he was a young man than most of the and a lot of the military and or NASA had. But they took him to this place where it was an underground, and they had a UFO or a vehicle there.
Mm-hmm.
And when you put he put his hands in the area where the it flew, he said it was like it came alive. It was like a live machine. I'll never forget that. I don't remember the full story, Kevin, but it fits just exactly to what you're saying now.
You know, I remember that story. It's been a while. He said there was a hole blown in the side of it.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that story.
Yeah, and so that fits very well with that. That's the other thing. Their technology is so more further advanced than ours that there is some type of way that energy can be created within a craft. For an example, you take a remote generator, which they have done studies with, and they put it next to some baby chickens, some chicks, and they follow the pattern of this robot, and it gets closer and closer. It's random, so it has no set pattern. But all of the drawings that it makes on the paper, you can see just get closer and closer to the chicks. The point that I'm trying to make is that there is some type of energy that we all have, a vibration that communicates with others, with other solid objects.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that this is a very strong possibility that they have developed the technology to use energy in a manner in which it has some form of life of its own, for lack of a better word. Programmed for like a robot, but even more further advanced.
Well, theoretically, I can imagine how you would do that. But practically, from an engineering point of view, I don't know how you could ever engineer it. I'm not an engineer, by the way, but I don't know practically how you could ever engineer it. On a theoretical level, if we assume that consciousness just is, so we don't say Clifford Clift has consciousness, I have consciousness. What we would say is consciousness just is, and you're part of it, and I'm part of it. And if we assume then that all matter, because all matter is made of atoms, and so all matter is arranged as it is by this consciousness that just is, if that happens to be true, then theoretically we ought to be able to tune our frequency to the frequency that other matter is using and communicate with it.
Kevin, I agree with you 100%. We're all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
When I walk into a room, I can sense the energy, positive and or negative.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you can too.
Yeah.
We learn to do this unconsciously or consciously, I don't know. But we can all sense energy from other beings.
Yeah, I think all of us have had the sensation of somebody's watching me.
And they are.
Yeah, you turn and you look around, and sure enough, there's someone staring at you. You know, yeah.
When I go to church and I get bored with the sermon, I will start looking at somebody in front of me. mm-hmm. in the back of their head. And invariably they'll turn around after a while.
All right, so maybe the search for the propulsion system has to be a little bit more metaphysical than technological.
Kevin, I am of the opinion at this point, after being the international director for MUFON and the people, the credible people, and just the average person that I wouldn't know, I think there is so much more to this UFO phenomenon than a nuts and bolts.
Mm-hmm.
There is something more significant. When people, a good friend of mine, saw within 200 feet a physical gunmetal flying saucer in his out of his backyard with his two brothers, and he said it was there. We were looking at it, absolutely jaws on the ground, too scared to run, too scared not to, didn't know what to do, just stood there and watched it, and it was gone. It didn't fly away, it was just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy is impeccable with his honesty. He just is the most honest person in the world. Well, when something like that happens, there's something else going on besides what we know physics to be.
Well, I have had a number of physicists on the show, including Dr. Michio Kaku. And what I'm about to say, I've said to several of them, although he was the first one I said it to on air. And that is, there are no laws of physics. What we're calling laws of physics really are not laws. They're just descriptions of our best current understanding. And that's
very
subject
good,
to change.
Kevin.
That's subject to change.
Yeah, that's very good. That is, you know, I went to New York, by the way. The Daily Show, Jon Stewart flew me to New York Sunday, and I was filmed then Monday morning and got back last night doing a piece for MUFON, but it was, it's going to be a funny, humorous one, and we need to laugh more, as we said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be funny, so I'm sure that it's one of those things that some people would be upset about, but you know, we need to laugh at ourselves a little bit. And one of the things that Wyatt, the guy that interviewed me for the John Daly Show, was he dressed up like an alien.
Mm-hmm.
And he was asked, they prompted me before, and they said, okay, now what would you ask an alien if he came up and talked to you? And I said, well, I'd like to know where he's from, what he's doing, and that type of thing, how he got here. And so they prompted this guy, and then when they cut away and came back, and he came up in this goofy-looking alien suit with a keyboard from a computer, and he's going, nanu, nanu, and talking like that. And I said, hi, my name's Cliff. What is your name? And he said, da-da-da, whatever. And I said, where are you from? And he says, something smart. And he said, somewhere out in wherever it was. And I said, well, you know, from the looks of from your looks, I would suspect you're from Uranus. So I don't know if that'll be in the show, Kevin, but the point that I'm trying to make is we're doing a lot of good things to get MUFON out into the public. But the point I was trying to make was, coming back, I sat by an ophthalmologist on the plane, and we were talking about some of the UFO activity and some of these things, and he could not grasp the fact that there might be something more important or bigger than eye surgery.
But, you know, he's not alone in that. There are literally billions of people on this planet who cannot grasp that there's something bigger and more important than what they're focused on.
That's right.
You know, in the grand scheme of things, what I do doesn't make much difference. In the grand scheme of things, what any individual does doesn't make much difference, except when you think of it like this. One little molecule of water doesn't make much difference, but a bunch of them get together and it makes an ocean.
And well, and that's right. And but, you know, the other thing that I think that is involved with that, Kevin, I think the positive energy that you portray to your guests and to the people and family and friends you're around has a significant impact. Your little molecule of kindness and goodness goes so much further than we even think, and the energy that derives from that. So maybe we don't think we're really making a difference, but I'll tell you what, Kevin, I bet you have made more difference in people's lives than you can imagine. Positive.
Well, I certainly hope so. I do. But, you know, what I'm getting at is that there are things far more important than what I do.
Yeah, right. Well, I understand that.
You know, in a cosmic sense, there are lots of things more important than what I do. Now, there's not anything more important to me. I want to clarify this first. There's nothing more important to me than my wife and my son.
There you go.
But because of them, there's nothing more important that I could do than what I do. With them, it's what I be. With the show, it's what I do. Bad English, but I think it communicates.
Well, no, I think you're right. There's a synergism that goes between people of family and friends. There's, we feed good or bad off of each other.
Yeah, and how does that affect now, this synergy? How does that sort of thing affect the work of MUFON? Because you've got all these people out there working on investigating UFOs. So how does synergy play into the MUFON family?
Well, first of all, and that's really a good question, Kevin, because MUFON wouldn't exist without all of the field investigators, the 1,000 volunteers that we have that help us archive and get the information to investigate these UFOs, and then we try to get this all out to the public. So we support each other. There's this international headquarters of MUFON. We are supporting these people out in the field, trying to give them the best tools and information that they can have to help them become more professional at the investigator level. And by the way, we just have a new STAR team manager, Fletcher Gray. He just announced today that he's taking over our STAR team manager. Fletcher is chief investigator in Texas, has a forensic law enforcement background, knowledgeable in computers, organizational skills, just a top-notch person. So by bringing these types of people on board to help others, we just help each other back and forth, and that's what we try to do. Now, sometimes there's people that don't want to help us, and that's fine. They can go somewhere else. That's the way life is. But other people want to help us, we'll help them. We work together. We feed off of each other.
You mentioned the STAR team. Let me make this announcement quickly. Ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are now open. So if you wish to call and talk with Clifford Clift, if you have a question for him or maybe a comment. He is the international director of MUFON, and we're not going to make a big deal out of the telephones tonight, but they're open, all right, if you want to call. 623-444-5889 is the number. And we also have, for those of you who live outside of the USA and outside of Canada, we have the flash message option for you. You can call us, but if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, you can send us a flash message. Now, you do that by going to my website, When you get to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show. And right above the picture is a link that says Flash Message. Again, the telephone number is 623-444-5889. All right, now, you mentioned the STAR team, Clifford, and we've talked about this before, but I think it's something a lot of people really don't know what that is unless they're in MUFON. If they're in MUFON, they know, they understand, but if they're not in MUFON, they don't know, they don't understand. So what is the STAR team?
STAR team, Kevin, is the group of field investigators that meet certain criteria to qualify to become a STAR team member. To give you an example, our STAR team members are field investigators that have a minimum of 15 investigations completed and understand the investigative process and how to work with the witnesses. Once they have the 15, then their state director will nominate them for the position as STAR team member.
Okay.
And then we will check them and make sure everything's okay, and then they become a STAR team manager. Now, some of the other criteria that they need to have, Kevin, is that they need to be able to deploy within 24 hours on a significant event, like a Category 2 or a Category 3 event.
Mm-hmm.
And that's extremely important because the forensics go cold after so much time, and the quicker we can get to the witnesses and the evidence that's left behind, if there is some, we are better off and more professional with the results. So besides that, they need to usually, most of them have their own equipment, like a Geiger counter, a hazmat suit. They might have the trimeters, electrometers, gavitometers, and that type of thing. So they're able to go out and do some real research on whatever the investigation is. They are, they're volunteers, Kevin, and they do this on their own nickel. Some of these STAR team members have got $10,000 worth of equipment, infrared camcorders, digital cameras with infrared, night vision goggles. They go all out to get the right material or right equipment so they can go out on a good investigation.
Okay, what about travel expenses? Do they have to take care of that by themselves?
They do, and what we try to do is if we have enough, since I'm in Colorado, I believe there happens to be 5-star team members here. So they're strategically located around the state so that they can get to an event quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we like to do, is have our state directors nominate these people. And then the STAR team information is exciting stuff.
So you have a STAR team in every state, all 50 states?
There's still a couple of states that we don't, but there's at this point in time, I believe there's just two that don't have STAR team members. I don't know why, because the state director should understand that this is a real honor and privilege for their field investigators to be a STAR team member. So they're coming around, but the rest of the states, we all have STAR team members that are ready to be deployed, and Fletcher's working on setting up all of the computer technology necessary to make contact very quickly on a Category 3.
You've mentioned Category 2 and Category 3 now a couple of times. Tell you what, let's do. Let's take this call, and then I'd like to know what Category 2 and Category 3 mean, but let's take this telephone call.
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Clifford, I'm going to get right to the heart of the matter on the controversy.
Oh, okay.
What is the deal with this non-disclosure agreement the STAR team members have to sign?
Non-disclosure agreement.
Brent,
I'm not following what you're saying exactly.
There was an article, a couple of articles by this lady who used to be a member of one of your STAR teams. I think it was Colorado.
Oh, okay. Now I know what you're talking about. Okay. Here's in 2009, Brent, we had some attorneys draw up non-disclosure agreement, confidentiality agreement, and background check agreement. And, of course, when attorneys do things, they have a tendency to make it pretty tight. Well, in 2010, when I was reading these, just becoming a new international director, I thought these are a little tough to handle. So we started in January reworking those, and as of April, we have all new documents that are now available. The background check that we do is for, we check the public records for criminal activity. Public records for criminal activity. So that would be anybody that has a criminal background and it's a public record, we would know about it, because we certainly don't want to have a sex offender or a pedophile or that type of person as a field investigator from UFON going into people's homes. And we have found five so far that have records that would not be very good. Confidentiality agreement, that has all been totally changed, Brett. Is it Brent?
Yes.
Yeah, Brent. That's totally been changed. It's very innocuous now. And the documents that this lady you're talking about is mentioning haven't been in effect for 3 months.
Okay, I think what her main beef, and I kind of agree with her, is that your STAR team members could not disclose anything they learned to anyone except you.
Wrong.
Okay, now explain what's going on.
STAR team member will keep the case confidential until it has been closed out, which is what you would do on any case as a field investigator.
Okay, so she missed out. She missed out the part which says until the investigation is complete.
That's exactly right. Half sentences and half truths are usually the culprit.
Okay, that's what
I am really glad you asked the question, Brent, because that's very significant. All those forms that she's talking about have been changed for 3 months.
Okay, that's just what I wanted to know.
Okay, thanks, Brent.
Come up and see me in Colorado sometime.
If I could afford to, I would.
Okay.
Hey, buddy.
Thanks for the call, Brent. Okay, Category 2, Category 3, what? I'm not familiar with the MUFON terminology and what that is. So what are those?
Okay, well, let's start with Category 1, Kevin. Category 1, I'm standing here right now looking out into this beautiful moon in the sky.
Okay.
If I would see some lights dancing around up there in the sky, that would be a Category 1, because I'm not able to determine the depth, the size, the real speed, and that type of thing. So that's pretty much the lights in the sky. Category
okay,
two,
we're going to have to, we'll have to pick that up on the other side of the break. We just got caught by the break. And to our caller on hold, hang on and we'll get you right after the break. We'll be back, folks, after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We have a caller online. Caller, can you hang on for just a moment while we get this answer from our guest? Okay, I'm not hearing our caller. All right, so let's go back to our guest. Clifford, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Clifford, Category 1, we see some lights go past the moon.
Category 1, yeah, would be like the lights in the sky that you might see in the day or the night. That you can't get the depth perception, you can't get any visual of the craft, you can't tell a lot about it. It may be a very quick event, like 2 or 3 seconds.
Uh-huh.
That would be our Category 1. Category 2, Kevin, is one where where the witness is closer to the object. They might be able to define the craft. They might be within 500 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty significant. The Category 3 is one where there is possibly a landing or within 100 feet of the object. Trace elements are then able to be used and
so a truly close encounter.
Very close encounter, yeah.
Yeah.
We tried to get away from the CE 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, although those are very good ways of defining the craft or the object, but it's easier for us to do with Category 1, 2, and 3 right now, so that's why we're using those names.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, this is John, in your old hometown of Mesa again.
Hello, John.
How are you doing tonight?
Outstanding, sir. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if either of you have heard of a aerospace scientist called Stan Deyo, D-E-Y-O.
Yeah, he's been a guest here on the show a number of times.
Oh, okay. Well, I just wondered if there'd been any. I've seen a couple of his YouTube things on his anti-gravity.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen anything more on it. I was wondering if either of you had more information or another place where there might be more information on his anti-gravity. I think he used mercury to rotate around two perpendicular magnetic fields.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm sorry, John, Cliff, go ahead.
John, I don't know of anything more than what you just said. I haven't heard anything further. I got a real long email from somebody on anti-gravity that I'm not scientist enough to understand what he was talking about. So I can't be of a lot of help in that situation.
Okay.
Now, John, I have a video of a seminar that Stan Deyo did, a presentation. And I have shown that as one of the special broadcasts in our members area twice. So I don't know if you're a member, but if you're not a member, that's a good motivation for you right there. We do special broadcasts, and we bring those sorts of things to you.
Well, I think that would be a good reason right there.
There you go.
John, you're on the right track.
Okay.
All right, John, thanks for the call. All right. Category 1, Category 2, Category 3, and if it's a Category 2 or 3, that's when you bring out the star team, is that right?
That's usually when we have deployment of the star team. Now, the primary field investigator that may have been on the case initially is not cut out of the investigation. The star team member will assist the primary field investigator to get provide the equipment maybe that would be needed and that type of thing. So the star team members are usually pretty well experienced in investigation, so they can really help a new field investigator understand more about the right questions to ask, how to ask the questions, and what evidence to look for.
Okay, now you made mention of this confidentiality in answering Brent's question. You made mention that the confidentiality agreement was the same for the field investigator, that you don't talk about it until the case is closed, right?
Right.
Okay. Who is it that makes the decision to close the case?
Well, when all the evidence is gathered and we can determine, our chief field investigators, Marie Malzahn's our director of investigation, Dave McDonald is our assistant, and then the state director and or the chief field investigator of the state, they'll all agree that the case is all we've done, all the information we can do and get on the subject, so that's the best we can do. We would define it as unidentified or black ops craft or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm. So it's sort of a committee of people then that determine that the case is closed.
It can be a committee, but as a rule, what we do, Kevin, is if Marie or Dave or state director or the chief field investigator or feel that that's all that can be done, then we'll go with what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's really a significant event, then we might sit down and say, well, let's talk about this, 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 or this. Think about that.
But mm-hmm.
beyond that, no, we can close them out fairly easily.
What happens to them when you close them out?
We throw them away. I say
really?
That because that's the usual thought that goes around. What we're working on right now, Kevin, is to be able to get on our new website, as we're redoing the old one, the results of the major cases that have happened in the past. So if you could click on and say case 95021, August of 2010, what's the results of that? You click on it, and it would show you what we came up with for the results. Now, obviously, we can't do that, Kevin, on all of the Category 1s, because when you get, you know, 500 sighting reports a month, you know some of them right away are not going to be anything.
Mm-hmm. Tonight, during the break, during one of the breaks, on our TV channel, we played a video from YouTube. Now, I'm a big fan of YouTube and a big critic of it at the same time. It's
right.
got some great stuff, but man, what garbage you have to wade through to get to the good stuff. But
yep.
this video that we played tonight is a video of an airplane coming in for landing. I believe, and I could be wrong, I think it was in Virginia. And this UFO comes shooting out of the cloud and goes right above the plane. It's so fast that when the video plays at normal speed, all you see is a cloud that looks like it explodes. You know, it looks like, you remember before they had smokeless powder and you fire a gun and you get this explosion of smoke out the barrel.
Uh-huh.
That's what the cloud looked like it did. It was just in a straight line explosion of cloud. But when they slowed it down, you can clearly see a UFO exploding out of the side of that cloud, causing that cloud to follow it. You know, it's pulling vapor with it. And it goes right over the airplane. You cannot see the UFO at normal speed. It's going too fast.
Wow.
Have you heard about this?
Part of the problem we have with the videos and the pictures on YouTube is our photo analysts are unable to do much with those unless they have the original
mm-hmm.
or a duplicate that before it goes on to the YouTube.
Yeah.
They tell me that they're unable to get the perception and the depth and the things they need off of YouTube, so we're very reluctant to comment on those. And we don't comment on UFO sightings, Kevin, unless we're asked to do so, or if it's in the public domain.
All right, so in order, when you say asked to do so, that
yes,
means someone
wants to report a sighting and says, clicks on the part that says, would you like to have an investigator contact you? Field mm-hmm. investigator, and if they say yes, then that's fine. Other than that, we're presumptuous to think that we could just go waltzing in and get this information.
What percentage would you say of the people who report, you said you have like 500 a month, what percentage of those people would you say do not have an interest in having an investigator contact them?
Maybe 10%, but maybe more than that to begin with, but so many people want to remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
Once they find out that we protect their anonymity, then they're ready to have an investigator. So we may have more to start with, but once they find out their names will be protected, then I would say maybe 10% is what the bottom line is.
Mm-hmm. All right, now let me ask you this. Have you ever seen a cow?
Seen what?
A cow.
A cow?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact.
Okay. Did you want to remain anonymous after you saw the cow?
Well, no, it wouldn't make any difference to me.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of how I think about UFOs. People see one and they want to remain anonymous. Why? I mean, they've
Most
seen doorknobs.
People feel like their friends and family will think they're nuts.
Well, they already do think they're nuts. Everybody on the planet's nuts. All right. Let's go to the telephone. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi, Cliff. My question is for Cliff. Just like Kevin was saying, you know, if you've seen a cow, you know you've seen a cow. And Kevin does a little thing during his breaks where he talks about evidence. And, you know, it doesn't have to be extraordinary evidence to prove that, you know, evidence is evidence. And you have
right.
all these cases where people see UFOs. Does it frustrate you that nothing's really coming of it? I mean, it seems like, so what if there's 10,000 people or 20,000 people? It seems that the powers that be are never coming to any fruition.
Yes, it is very frustrating. The problem that we have is that people just, 1 out of 10 will report a UFO event. All the information that we get provides us a clearer picture. For an example, there were 3 lights over Lafayette, Colorado in March that appeared to be a triangle craft and was videoed, which was on the YouTube. We had 5 reports of that event that night between 8:32 and 8:36. And we were able to investigate it. Well, the one that the papers picked up, the 2 things that happened were, one of the skeptical inquirer people said that it was a slurry bomber fighting forest fires in the mountains. Well, that obviously was not true. The other one was that they were flares, road flares from trucks, that type of thing, on balloons. Well, these 3 lights were in exact dimensions and size all the time, which is not going to happen with balloons.
All right, we have to step away for break. Both of you guys hang on just a moment, and we'll be back. Welcome back. We're on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. My guest this evening, Clifford Clift, he is the International Director of MUFON, and on the telephone with us, Jerome from Pennsylvania, I hope. Jerome, are you still with us?
Yes, Kevin. Thank you.
Okay. Now, Clifford was just about to answer. He was talking about how it gives each of these events that gets reported that gives us a clearer picture, and then we got cut away for break. So, Clifford, go ahead.
Jerome, the big thing is we're let's see. Ask me your question again so that I can be more in touch with exactly what you're saying.
Okay. Basically, what I asked was that you have all these sightings. And whether it's 1 sighting, 10,000, or whatever, you're still not getting any result. And I asked you if you were frustrated with that.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, it is frustration, but it is also rewarding, because when we start piecing these different events together, we can see some pattern or something that is showing us that this event is not separate. It's more than one. An example might be we get a report from England about a triangle, and they have seen the actual craft, and then we get one in North Carolina of the report is almost exactly duplicate, and it might be within an hour after the one in England or wherever. So we're able to do that. Now, one of the things that frustrates us, Jerome, is the fact that we don't have enough volunteers to help us do the research, nor do we have the funds necessary to do the research that would be able to compile this information into one organized definition of what the objects are and where they're going and that type of thing. So, yeah, that's frustrating, but we get some really good information, and when we start correlating it, it starts making a lot of sense.
Jerome, let me throw 2 cents in here, too. The powers that be are never going to come around, okay? First of all, they don't listen to the people that put them in power, and they don't care, all right? They prove it again and again and again. And on this issue of UFOs, I think the powers that be are 100% irrelevant. Totally irrelevant. We don't need the government to pat us on the head and say, yes, you've seen a doorknob. And in the same way, we don't need them to pat us on the head and say, yes, you saw a UFO. We know what we saw. We don't need them telling us and confirming to us that we saw what we saw. We saw it. And just like I asked Clifford a moment ago, have you seen a cow? You don't run to the government and ask them if it's a cow. So I think, you know, we're the people that put those people in power. That means we're more powerful than they are, because when we learn the word no, they're out of power. That means we have it within our power to investigate these on our own and find out what's going on. It may take a long time, but we have it within our power to do it. They do not have it within their power to keep it secret forever.
You're right on, Kevin. Jerome, I'll tell you a story that happened with myself and John Schuster. We had an audience with a U.S. senator about the UFO phenomenon, and he was on the Armed Forces Intelligence Committee, and you could tell from the very get-go when we told him that we wanted to talk to him about the UFOs, and MUFON wanted to be the reporting center for the FAA and that type of thing. He looked at us like we had 3 heads. He didn't even know what we're talking about. He says, "Do you have any pictures of those things?" This is a U.S. senator on the Armed Forces Intelligence Committee, and he didn't even know what we were talking about. So, as Kevin says, it's even higher than these folks.
Well, Kevin always preached the same lecture about we are the ones who are going to change things, and maybe we should start listening to that.
He's exactly right. We're the only ones that can change this, and it's high time that somebody started paying attention to us.
Yeah,
thank you, Cliff, for being a guest, and thank you, Kevin.
You bet. You know, the people we send to Washington, the idea that somehow they're bigger, better, and more bright than the rest of us, what a farce.
Yes, that's right.
You know, the rest of us are too busy to go, and we have things that are way too important, and we send the leftovers.
Yeah.
That's true. And
we send wieners.
These people are never going to get it. If they were capable of getting it, they wouldn't have been in politics. They're never going to get it.
Exactly right.
So, you know, why look to them for answers? The answers are right out here on the ground. It's up to us to pick them up, examine them, and analyze them.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. I want to give you the opportunity to tell us, what is your website and how can people join?
people can become a subscriber to MUFON by going to www.mufon.com. That's MUFON.com. And there's a place there to join our organization and become a field investigator. It's like $35 a year for 12 journals. Those are e-journals, or $45 for hard copy, or $50 for both, e-journal and hard copy. And then once you have become a subscriber member to MUFON, then at that point you can become a field investigator, and we truly need field investigators. So if you're interested in the UFO subject, this is the place to go and how you can learn to be a field investigator.
All right. Well, you know, Clifford, I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate the fact that you didn't dodge my questions about all of this bad publicity, and you didn't dodge questions from the audience about it. I appreciate you being up front with us about it.
Kevin, that's who I am. I will be up front with everybody, and sometimes people don't like that, but I'm up front. We know where we stand.
All right. If you will, just hang on for a couple of minutes here until I can bring this show in for a landing. I want to talk with you for just a moment after we go off the air. Again, thanks for being with us this evening, and I hope the symposium is a blast.
Kevin, it's going to be a great one. Thank you for your time on your show. You are always a wealth of information, and I always learn something when I talk to you.
Well, that's a big compliment. I appreciate it. Just hang on for a moment. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you go. That's Clifford Clift. He is the international director for MUFON. And, you know, I think all of us have been reading, and we've been seeing these criticisms. And I told him before he came on the show, I was going to ask those questions. And he didn't shy away from it. I appreciate that. Be sure you get over to the MUFON website and check out the symposium, but also join up, become a member of MUFON, and help solve the mystery. PTBs are not going to solve it for us, and putting pressure on them to do something they're not capable of doing is not going to work. Okay? So I think the thing to do is for us to remember we put them in power. That means we are more powerful than they are. They got it from us. So we can go find out what's going on. And groups like MUFON, I think, are very, very, very important. They play an important role in that. Tomorrow night, producer Michael Lamport and psychic Robbie Thomas will be with me. Producer Michael Lamport is the producer of the TV show that I was a part of. So this ought to be fun. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.